Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after. 800-531-3815, toll free coast to coast. Joan Pride is our guest, senior editor. With a Kiplinger editor, she's our good friend. Joan, welcome back.
Good morning, Jim. How are you?
Good. Doing great. Thanks for being back with us.
Thank you.
Well, you know, Joan, this is not the lead story of the letter this week. It's actually toward the end, but it's probably what we need to start talking about, because there was a fairly important event that happened at the White House yesterday. You want to tell us what that was?
Yes, and it happened inside because it was too rainy for them to do it in the Rose Garden. I mean, it's very unusual. Normally, what we're referring to is the president signing the tax bill. Normally, yeah. He has a big Rose Garden ceremony. It's very beautiful, but mm-hmm. He was inside yesterday, which seemed odd to me.
In the East Room.
In the East Room, right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Which is a cool place to be, Joan. I'm sure you...
I believe it. I'm sure I've been there.
Yeah, I know you have. But anyway, it was interesting to see all that and hear him speak about all the things that he thinks the tax bill will do, and to talk about. Did you notice, Joan? I don't know. Did you get a chance to hear the speech?
No.
Well, one of the things that I would like to point out for people, whether you're a Republican or a Democrat or a mugwump, I don't care, whether you like Mr. Bush or not, but if you're a small business owner, whenever you hear him speak of domestic matters, notice how many times he talks about small business. Joan, I don't know if you've noticed it or not, but of course, with my antenna, I pick up on these things pretty readily. And he actually references small businesses a lot in his speeches.
Well, that's...
And, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, that's good.
Well, it just, to me, as I say, regardless of how your politics lie, if you're a small business owner, it's got to make you feel good to hear the president of the country talking about what you do.
Absolutely.
I mean, he doesn't mention steel workers all that much.
Well.
He doesn't mention coal miners all that much.
Yep.
He talks about small business. And I think it's because he realizes that small businesses are important to this country.
Well, he was a small business owner, wasn't he?
At one point, I guess you could say that. Yeah. But the main thing is he's made a payroll.
Right.
That, to me, that qualifies him as a fellow traveler. Anybody, Democrat, Republican, or mugwump who's made a payroll, who signed the front of a payroll check instead of the back of one, is a fellow traveler.
That's what it's like, right?
That's exactly right. So tell us about the bill. What do you know about it?
Okay, well, what we're saying is that the economy, it's not going to get a big, huge boost, but a small boost, and we're saying a well-timed nudge from these tax cuts.
Yeah.
Now, there's one of the things it does is reduces the top, reduces just about all the marginal income tax rates, but... The top rate will go down from 38.6% to 35%,
mm-hmm.
which may not sound like much, but that's a pretty big drop.
Yeah, what's that? That's like 8 or 9%, something
right,
like that?
Right, that's quite a bit. Now, yeah. Another thing, too, is that the president didn't get everything he wanted on dividends, but what Congress did was to lower taxes on capital gains and dividends, maximum rate of 15%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I never thought I'd see a maximum rate of 15%
right.
of for capital gains.
That's a 25%
cut.
That's
huge, right.
Isn't it?
Right.
It's 25% on capital gains, but it's more than that
dividends. Well, always taxed as ordinary income.
Yeah.
So that your tax rate decline will depend on what tax bracket you're in. But it's still huge.
Well, dividends were being taxed at double, once at the company and once at the distributing them, and once as the individual. And the president wanted to eliminate the double taxation, so it's down to 15%. And Joan, as I've said many times on the show,
I know what you're going to say.
Let's all say it together. We might not like the numbers, but we got to like the trend.
Right. Yeah. I think this was pretty much. You know, he did a smart thing. He realized he wasn't going to get everything he wanted, so rather than draw a line in the sand or hold up the bill, he knocked some heads and pushed it through.
Joan, let me mention, you mentioned the capital gains thing.
Right.
There's not a lot of buzz about that, but I think that's a mistake. I think that's a mistake not to emphasize how important that is. Imagine a 25% reduction in the tax on capital gains. I believe that one thing could be as beneficial to the economy as the dividend cut.
Oh, I think so. Taken together, they're very important. And like you say, they really, capital gains was not really on the table, wasn't being talked about. Because we've had years where people harp on a reduction in the capital gains rate. Not this year. And I think it's part of it's because people are focusing too much on their losses and not on their gains in the stock market. But, you know, the stock market's been creeping up. So if people need an extra incentive to buy stocks, you know, these might help.
Well, before long, your 201K will be back up to 301K, right?
Oh,
John?
Please. Someday, maybe.
And then maybe one day in your lifetime, it'll be back up to
the 401K.
To a 401K.
Yeah, 3.5 at least. 3.5K.
Well, the thing that we've got to realize, Joan, I think, is that our economy is based on capital. It's a capitalistic economy, and the best way to grow an economy like this is to make capital encourage capital to flow, and the best way to encourage capital to flow is not to tax it to death.
Right, and we certainly are not getting the capital flows that we need to really get the recovery going.
That's where the problem is. It's not with the consumer, is it?
No. The poor consumer has been the marathon runner, as we keep calling him.
God bless him.
Yeah, and this consumer is going to get a little more help, too, because there's other cuts. There's going to be a reduction in the marriage penalty and also an increase in the child credit.
Right.
So you'll get money right off your income for the number of children you have.
It's going up to 1,000.
Right, up from 600. That's huge.
Yep. And it didn't. Isn't so? Aren't there going to be? What's the check? There's a rebate coming back too, isn't there? $25 million.
That part of it I don't understand. I know that the withholding tables will be changed, so your paycheck will go up.
Yeah.
If you're in either of these categories, but yeah, I think there's a certain group. I think it's toward the lower end of the income scale. People that will get rebate checks.
Right. Exactly. Well, let's you know, if you look at the small business though, Joan. You know, some of us have dividends. We're going to get a cut there. Some of us have assets that we need to sell. That's a cut there with the capital gains.
Right.
We all pay marginal rates, so those rates came down for a lot of people.
Right.
Some of us are married, and we get a break on the marriage tax penalty.
Yes.
That's four. All right. Number five is the AMT. See, one of the things you can't lower rates if you don't do something with AMT, alternative minimum tax, because if you lower the regular rates, you get this shadow tax that comes back and gets you.
Right, because your regular tax liability might be lower, but if you have to compute it for AMT purposes and that's higher, you have to pay that.
Exactly. So they changed that so you don't get caught.
Right.
So it doesn't become a catch-22 type of thing.
Exactly.
And then what else? I mean, there are several other things, and so all those little things trickle down to putting more working capital in small businesses. And Joan, even though it's half of what the president wanted, we don't like the number, but we got to like the trend.
Well,
I'm sorry, we forgot the direct expensing quadrupled from $25,000 a year to $100,000 a year.
Which is huge. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Stand by. Here we go. We'll be right back after these messages, folks. 20 after. Stay with us. We're back. It's 23 after. Joan Pride is our guest. She is senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, one last thing on the tax bill. One of the things I think the president was trying to do was get this thing signed and into law in time for people to be able to take advantage of it by July.
Right.
Which should include people recalculating their quarterly or their monthly estimated taxes. So you should be able to see a direct benefit from this, like within the next 45 days or so.
Oh right. Oh, I think so. Yes.
But check with your accountant so you know when everything goes into effect. Part of this bill goes into effect, I think, May the 6th, and part of it goes back retroactive to January 1st. I know that the direct expensing goes retroactive to January 1st, but some of this stuff doesn't start until about the 5th or 6th of May.
Right. Right.
So, and don't ask me why they do it that way. But
why do they do it that way?
It's just another way to keep us off guard. Another way the government just lets us know that they're really in control.
Yeah, I know.
You know, no way they're going to make it easy, right?
True.
So I'm not going to complain though. We got the numbers we want. We got the trend we like. You know, the cool thing is that somebody said that one of the things the Republicans want to do is have a tax cut every year. And I just think that's excellent politics.
You would, sure.
I think that's excellent politics. quickly though, Joan, did you know about President Clinton dissing President Bush yesterday in a speech?
Yesterday, no. What happened?
Well, he basically just dissed him. And I mean, here he is, you know, he's been out of office, you know, 2.5 years or so, and totally disregarding the age-old protocol of and respect of not running their mouth, you know, right after they get out of office, which he hasn't been able to do. Bill Clinton, which he's entitled to his opinion, and he may be right. I'm not saying that he's not. It's just that as you know, past presidents have kept their mouth shut for a reasonable period of time.
Okay.
But
well, there's no law that says he can't criticize.
No, I said that. I said that. Yeah. But I'm just saying.
But that bothers you that he has broken this sort of unwritten rule.
It does. It bothers a lot of people. Okay. Yeah, it does bother me that, and I think it speaks to his narcissism.
Well, I don't have a problem with him criticizing the president at all.
Yeah.
I'm sure if the tables were turned and it was a Republican criticizing a Democrat, it wouldn't bother you.
No, it would. No,
okay.
That's where you're wrong. No, you're wrong about that.
I'm going to write this down.
No, you're wrong
remember.
About that. No,
okay.
I'm talking about fair play and things that are valuable. Things that are anyway. I don't want to dwell a lot on this thing. It's just no. If George Bush leaves office in 2009 and he opens his mouth, you know, about the next president within a couple of years or so, I'll say the same thing about him. I think they ought to wait.
Okay. Well, when that happens, I've got this written down. So
you write it down.
Bring it up then.
You can write that down.
Okay.
I'll be
Good.
True to my word.
Good. Thank you.
Let's move over and talk about the news, though, on hiring. You guys say that it's not too exciting right now.
No, things are still pretty slow. I mean, if you need somebody, there's a lot of unemployment out there.
Yeah.
We're saying hiring won't pick up much until the middle of next year.
Mm-hmm.
And we're saying that, you know, in our ability to turn a phrase, our recovery is even more jobless than the last one. In the recession of 91-92, when we came out of that, people were calling that a jobless recovery because we weren't adding jobs very quickly until more toward the mid to late 90s.
Well, and it's because we're more productive in other ways these days. I mean, productivity
exactly.
is doing pretty good, actually, in this country, isn't it?
Well, and in fact, that's sort of the point we're making, that productivity is a double-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
Productivity is good for the economy, but if you have fewer workers, if you're getting more out of fewer workers, then you're not fueling this sort of job creation machine that we need to get the recovery really going.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And I thought this was interesting, though, Joan, that you tied, and it makes sense. I just never had seen the numbers this way. You tied the growth to the in employment specifically to an economic number, and you said that job growth needs a gross domestic product gain per year, an annual gain of 3.5, and we're only at 2.5.
Yeah, that's kind of I've not seen that before myself, so that sort of put it into perspective as to mm-hmm. how much we have to grow to really get jobs created.
Yeah, it's an interesting number. It's an interesting and a handy rule of thumb, isn't it, to say, well, you know, if to be able to track the GDP and see that when that jumps, I mean, obviously it's intuitive that when GDP jumps, employment should jump, but you're identifying basically a benchmark of 3.5 in order to get closer to full employment.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
Another thing is that you point out is that how atypical the pattern is with the auto industry, and because as you know, the auto industry is really taking it on the chin right now. They got a lot of inventory.
But and when we predicted that was going to happen because they sort of I don't want to say robbed Peter to pay Paul, but you know back a year or two ago when they really needed to stimulate auto sales, they did that by offering 0% financing.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, we said, and I mean, the auto sales numbers were just going through the roof.
Yeah.
We said, you know, this is really borrowing from later years, people speeding up auto purchases and making them now instead of making them later.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've gotten to later, which is the problem.
Well, exactly. And whereas typically that industry is one that recovers quickly, when we're coming out of a recession, it's actually going the other way. But as you say, I think it's because of some of the things the conditions that they manufactured themselves.
Right.
29 after. We're going to take a quick break. We got more to come right after these messages with our good friend Joan Price, senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
bird inside.
Now back to the man who humbly and graciously accepted this year's Small Business Journalist of the Year Award.
Who's the man? Who's the man?
Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
I love it when that piece comes up when Joan Pride's here.
Who's the man?
There's one thing that she calls me all the time. I mean, every other time I say hello, Joan, she says, how's Mr. Gracious? How's Mr. Humble? We're talking about the most recent letter, folks, and one of the things, Joan, that you guys talked about this week is that 2004 is going to be the year. Now, a lot of us were hoping that the last half of 2003 would be good, and it still may be good for some sectors. But basically, I get the idea that Kiplinger thinks that if you're looking for the next full year of solid performance, we got to wait till 2004.
Right, because in 2004, we're saying that there will be a 7% increase in business investment. Boy, do we need that.
And why would that happen, Joe? What do you think that might happen?
Why
would you think that we might have 7% increase in business investment? Could it be because we lowered capital gains?
No.
Could it be because we increased the direct expensing?
So you're saying without the tax bill, none of this would be happening?
I'm saying I think that's a lot of it. Yeah, I believe in this tax bill.
Okay.
Absolutely.
That's good.
Yeah. I think the tax bill is very convenient. but contrast that though, Joan, with what we've got this year in investment spending.
Well, that's the problem. 1% is almost nothing.
That's abysmal. That's almost frightening.
Yeah.
Joan. I didn't realize. I mean, I knew it was bad, but I didn't realize it had gotten that low.
Right. No, it's bad.
That's pretty bad.
Yeah.
And the sooner the better, but a net gain next year of jobs of 1.3 million, but almost no net increase
this year. Nothing this year, right.
Whew, man, that's going to be tough.
Yeah.
But here's another interesting point. You guys say that, and I guess this is not surprising, the services will lead manufacturing significantly in terms of employment.
Right, and you can really see, and I think we talk about it here, that the gap between service and manufacturing is really narrowing in terms of sort of the wage gap that
right.
we've always had.
Right. Well, one of the reasons why, though, that prediction might be not as dramatic as in terms of the difference between employment in service and manufacturing as you guys think is because the dollar is sliding a little bit.
Well, that's true.
And that ought to help our manufacturing a little bit, shouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're as close to being on par with the dollar's as close to being on par with the euro as it's ever been, and we're going to talk about that a little bit later on. Let's move over, though, and talk about something else. Let's talk about oil, Joan. OPEC's control over oil will ebb, you say, over the next several months. Now, is that because of Iraq?
Yes. Well, you know, OPEC's influence has been waning for a long time.
And a good thing, too.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, now you have the rise of a lot of non-OPEC producers that are not going to be interested in staying with these controls that OPEC puts on, because you've got Russia, Norway, Mexico, mm-hmm. and then you've got the U.S. at least temporarily controlling the Iraqi oil fields. So, you know, this might sort of be the big nail in the coffin for OPEC right now.
There's a whole lot of little apple carts could be upset by our releasing the Iraqis from the steel grip of Saddam Hussein.
That's right.
Not only that region being maybe perhaps there being some democracy established, true democracy in that region, right in the heart of that region in Iraq, but also releasing the second highest oil reserves in the world, 150 billion barrels of oil reserves, releasing that into the marketplace without being tied to the OPEC requirements, that could really change some things, couldn't it?
Oh, no question about it.
And so it makes you, are you saying, so what I'm wondering is if OPEC's controls are going to ebb because they're taking some defensive measures, or if it's just a result of what's happening over there?
Well, I think it's just a confluence of factors, and again, not just what's happening now, but this has been in the works for a long time.
Mm-hmm. It's good to have stable prices in petroleum, though, isn't it?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, we don't need them to drop back. Believe it or not, folks, we really don't need them to drop back to, like, you know, $9 a barrel or something like that.
No, that's kind of going too much in the other direction, because
yeah.
then you have industries in the United States that are hit hard and regions
right.
that really can't prosper at $9 a barrel oil.
Especially some of the smaller wells can't prosper at that what
right.
we need. The low producers, the small volume producers, need a little higher price. But we need to. I think we need oil in the teens, probably high teens or so. Let that be stable. We got more to come right after these messages with our good friend Joan Pride, senior editor with the Kiplinger Letters. It's 20 Till. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Let me remind you, coming up in the show straight ahead, we got Mark Mayberry, who's going to talk to us about customer loyalty. After that, we're going to be visiting with Steve Del Bianco. He's going to tell us what the Association for Competitive Technology is doing to help rid you and me of spam, which I'll be happy about. Steve Moore is going to join us to find out what he's going to do. He and his organization, the Club for Growth, is going to do to Republicans who didn't support the president's tax bill. And then after that, we'll be visiting with Leslie Kossoff, and she's always got some important executive thinking to talk to us about. That's coming up in the show straight ahead. Joan Pride is with us. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. They've got four letters. Count them, four. One is the weekly flagship, the Kiplinger Letter. Then they've got the three biweeklies, the Tax Letter, the California Letter, and the Agriculture Letter. And they also have a magazine.
That's right, Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And you can find all of them at kiplinger.com, just like it sounds, KIPLINGER.com. Or they got a phone number, too, Joan. What is
That's
it?
That's right. Our toll-free number is 800-544-0155.
Joan, let's move over and talk about, this is an interesting thing. I didn't know about this 6,000-mile rail line that's going to connect the U.S. and Mexico.
Boy, that's huge.
Yeah.
And, well, by way of explanation, Southern Railway has bought out two Mexican rail carriers, and that's why we're saying that, you know, if you go from a city in say, the Midwest or even the Southeast, mm-hmm. you can get all the way to Mexico basically on one line.
Wow.
And what we're saying is that's going to help if you're shipping stuff and you're finding that the rates from charged by truckers are very high, rail might be a good alternative.
Well, exactly. And by the way, my dad retired from Southern Railroad.
Oh, I didn't
After about
that.
40 years, yeah.
Oh.
But think about this, Joan. One of the tensions between getting goods and services back and forth from Mexico has been the safety factor of the Mexican trucks and the drivers.
Oh, right.
Driving
right.
on our you know, you and I have reported on this, driving on our roads.
Yeah.
Well, maybe we got that problem partially solved with the train connections.
That would be nice.
Very interesting. I didn't know about this till you guys reported.
Well, that's why you take our letter.
I know. That's exactly right. Let's move it on down and talk about the non-smoking workplace, how businesses can actually, you guys report that you can actually save money by making your workplace no smoking.
Right. And in this case, we're sort of, our longer piece on the website isn't reflected here, but it's talked about how a lot of local governments are banning smoking in public places, and such as restaurants. I think New York City is kind of leading the way in that. But
mm-hmm.
what we're saying is a lot of private employers might want to look at that and see how that would benefit their own workplace.
Can you remember when you'd go into a hospital and people would actually be smoking in the rooms?
I'll be honest. No, I can't.
I can. It just blows my mind when I think about it.
Well, I can remember restaurants and other public places, you know, didn't even used to have a smoke-free area.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you didn't go to a restaurant and they'd say smoking or non-smoking. You just got a table, and if you were next to a big smoker, too bad.
Right, absolutely.
But in any case, I guess this is hard to quantify, but if you think about it, if you ban smoking in the workplace, I guess studies have shown that it encourages employees to stop smoking completely. And an employee that doesn't smoke is an employee you definitely want in terms mm-hmm. of their ability to stay healthy and productive.
Absolutely. And they're the ones that look really goofy. The ones who do smoke are the ones who look really goofy standing outside in the rain.
I've seen them in the snow and the cold.
Yeah. That would make me want to quit, just not have to stand out there and look like, anyway. Let's move on down, Joan, and talk about one of the important things that I think that small business owners need to focus on. I've written about it recently. It's called intermediation. You guys call it farming out peripheral tasks. The main thing is if small business owners need to do what we're good at, our core competencies, and we need to find other people to do the things that we're not good at.
Right, and I guess you can do that piecemeal, but part of this item was designed to talk about what we're calling total outsourcing, mm-hmm. where your firm gets a top-to-bottom analysis of what are the best areas that could be outsourced. And sure, you have to pay someone to do that analysis, but it will, reap benefits down the road long-term.
Mm-hmm. One of the questions I wrote about this, Joan, was what do we do that does not have to be done here? If you just ask yourself that question, and by the way, there's an article on my site, folks, at JBSBA, and these are questions that you can ask yourself. Does this have to be done in-house? And that's one quick way, Joan. You can do your own little survey.
Yes, you could.
Just to find out if...
Save yourself some money. And now, the thing is, you may not be sure about what's out there in terms of... You may say, well, I'd love to outsource this function, but it may not be possible to do that.
Right.
But I think if you are looking at someone who's a professional, they can tell you that side of it.
Well, and the point that I guess I was making with my little thumbnail approach is just to get you started.
Well, yeah, that's important.
Just to get the conversation going, and then you can say, wait a minute, we probably need some help with this.
Yeah, that's a very good idea.
And I certainly recommend that you seek help if you need it. But the main thing is don't do things that are, you may have people that could be better served, could better serve your company, doing things that you do than making payroll, for example, doing the payroll itself, or collecting your receivables or something like that. Maybe even delivery. Could even be delivery.
Right.
But there's so many different things that you can outsource these days. More and more people, there are more and more services available, Joan, these days that really and one of the things is how small businesses are growing these days is they're actually creating small businesses that are outsourcing companies and they're serving not only small businesses but big businesses. Stand by. Quick break, right back after these messages with our good friend Joan Pride at Stintill.
Really couldn't get away too soon. I can't imagine.
We're back at 7 till. Joan Pride is our guest, and we're talking about the most recent Kiplinger letter, the one that came out last Friday. And if you're a subscriber, you get it by email on Friday. If you get it by mail, you get it by snail mail. You get it on Monday. I get it both ways. I can't get enough of it. And now in their 80th year, by the way, folks, congratulations on that, Joan. I know that's...
Thank you.
That's a
big milestone. Worked 80 long years on this.
I know. You've worked a long time on this.
Right.
Haven't you?
Right.
Joan, some people say, especially Democrat presidential hopefuls, and I guess it's the only thing, one of the few things they can really kind of dig their stories into, is that we're not making a lot of progress on terrorism. But Kiplinger disagrees with those people.
Well, I guess we're kind of saying it's a good news, bad news proposition. Because for part of this item, we do say that there is some slow progress, and progress that might be a little bit under the radar screen. We talk about how, in terms of al-Qaeda's leadership, a lot of them have either been jailed or killed. And we've grabbed a lot of their money.
Mm-hmm. Billions of dollars.
Yeah.
And we've marshaled and mobilized countries around the globe, Joan, that 5-6 years ago were not on anybody's radar screen to nab terrorists or suspected terrorists and cooperate with the global community of anti-terrorist organizations. But these people are now popping up out of the woodwork. I mean, every week you hear some little country arresting these people that you never heard of before.
Right, and since, they may have overplayed, al-Qaeda may have overplayed its hand when it staged those attacks in Riyadh recently and also Casablanca.
Mm-hmm.
So that may turn world opinion against it even more.
Well, it certainly shined more sunlight on the regime in Saudi Arabia and has really basically made them do something about this, hasn't it?
Right, absolutely.
So there's
but
so
they
many.
They just caught a couple of guys yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they sure did. You know, there's so much going. And Joan, I'll tell you, I still say you can't minimize the fact that we put the kibosh on a terrorist jacket, a suicide jacket, suicide terrorist jacket factory, and took control of 1,000 suicide jackets, suicide vests.
You've never gotten over that jacket factory.
I haven't. No,
you?
I mean that's
you talk
a big
about
deal.
It every week.
I
yeah.
think that's a big deal.
It is.
That's just one example of how we were fighting terrorism. So anyway, I think we got some good news. I don't think we can't be complacent though.
Well,
so.
That's kind of also the point that Al Qaeda is not dead by any means.
Mm-mm.
And you know, given the fact that we're in Iraq now and people think of us as occupiers, even though we don't want to be, that is going to help them recruit anti-American people.
Well, and the other thing is we probably got more free agents than we used to have too.
Right, that's true.
Once they get connected from the head, they're still mad as heck out there, and so they just do their own thing, and probably on a much smaller scale. They're not,
right.
not as organized or well funded, but we still got a lot of evilness out there that we
yeah.
need to do something about.
Yeah.
Joan, let's move over and talk about the dollar. Let's tie that in a little bit let's tie all that in with the terrorists. Not terrorists, the tourists, I should say. We hope that the tourists would come into the United States, and with the falling dollar, which you guys reported on page 4 this week, tourists ought to be coming to the United States, is where it's going to be more expensive for the U.S. to go to other countries, especially Europe. But the economy in those countries is really not going to make that happen, is it?
That's right. It's kind of a strange situation because you would think with the lower dollar, you know, the dollar lower against their currencies, they have more buying power here.
Right.
But we're saying they're having so much trouble economically that they don't even have the currency to transfer it over here.
Mm-hmm.
So that we don't see tourism really picking up till 2004. Meanwhile, the dollar continues to slide against the euro.
Right. And so that hurts our effort, our interest, I should say, our buying power over there. And then, Joan, there's the other thing that's going on, and that's the fact that, you know, the French may not want to come over here. I certainly don't want to go to France right now.
I think that's right.
And I had a chance to go to either Germany or another country this summer, and I'm not going to Germany. I'm still a little bit ticked at them about
yeah.
their behavior.
Well, I think a lot of people are.
This last year.
Yeah.
So it's not only the money situation, it's the attitude, isn't it?
That's right.
So,
that's a good point.
Yeah, very, very interesting things going on. But the dollar is sliding, as we've said. The government seems to not want to protect it.
Right.
But I don't think that's going to last long, Joan. I think that's going to turn around. I think before too long. By this time next year, I think the dollar will be strengthened again.
Well, and our recovery will be really in better shape then, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Joan, thanks for being here. Good
Thank
job
you,
today.
Jim. Thank you.
We'll see you next week.
Sounds good.
Joan Pride, ladies and gentlemen, with Kiplinger. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, and let's not ever forget that we still have men and women in harm's way around the world standing a post on our behalf. Let's all remember them and pray for them. They're our heroes. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.